Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline D'Est, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Welcome to Write Through the Roof. Today I'm speaking with Margaret Ski. Hi Margaret, how are you going?
Hi Madeline, I'm fine, thank you.
That's great. Glad to have you on the show. A little bit of background about Margaret. So Margaret is a historical fiction writer, originally from Ulster, but now she lives on the Scottish borders, in the Scottish borders, isn't it? Her first novel, Turn of the Tide, which is set during the clan warfare of 16th century Scotland, won the historic fiction section of the 2011 HarperCollins Alan Titchmarsh People's Novelist Competition and was described as outstanding by Geoffrey Archer. Her latest novel, Katerina Deliverance, about Martin Luther's wife, is available now. Thanks for sparing the time to speak with me today, Margaret.
No problem.
Excellent.
Looking forward to it.
Ah, me too. So, because I've read Turn of the Tide and it's fabulous. Well, how I like to start off is a few kind of warm-up questions. So, you know, some side bends, maybe a few kind of jogging on the spot so we can get to know you a bit better. So as a historical fiction writer, you would imagine you would do lots and lots of research, but are you a plotter or a pantser?
I'm sort of half and half. I do make a storyboard, old school type post-it notes stuck on a big piece of cardboard that folds up. While I'm doing my research, any important or interesting little snippets that I find, I stick on post-it notes on this big storyboard. And then when I start writing, I come to the end of a chapter or an incident or whatever, and I look at my storyboard and think, what can happen next? And then I pluck one of my little post-it notes off, and that's where I go. Generally speaking, I know the start of the book, and I do quite like to know where I'm going to finish up, but I don't always. But I never know where I'm going along the way. Mm. Very much something that happens organically as I write.
So let me picture this. So you've got this bit of cardboard with all these post-its, and so you've thought of all these different things that could happen, but you just don't know necessarily what order they come in.
Yes. Oh. And also lots of historic events that I might or might not include. Mm.
Cool. Okay. I went to a conference just a few weeks ago, and a fantasy writer who's Australian called Jay Christoph referred to that approach of yours, and I seem to write similarly, as a join the dotser. So basically, you know, you've got your kind of signposts, but quite often you've got to work out how you get from point A to point B.
Yep. And I always have one or two key historic events that I know that I am going to include, but exactly when and where, I never know at the start. Hmm. And in fact, the second book, the sequel to Turn of the Tide, I did not know the ending until about 2 days before I wrote it. So that's a little bit scary.
I imagine. And it was a surprise to you as much as anyone else.
Yes, I think it was. I mean, Turn of the Tide, I knew exactly the final scene before I started writing anything. Mm. That was much easier because I was always writing towards it.
Mm. Okay, so when you actually sit down to write, do you have any writing rituals?
I need silence, absolute silence. I need chocolate, lots of. And I need freedom from distractions. So that has meant in the past mostly writing somewhere other than my own house. And I've variously written in a derelict cottage, an empty friend's house, a 17th century castle. I'm hoping one of these days I can actually sit down at my own desk and write there. But if I do, the internet will have to be switched off.
The 17th century castle. Now that you, this was you got a fellowship, didn't you? That was whereabouts was that?
That was Horfenden, which is in the Lowlands in Scotland. Absolutely fabulous.
Sounds like a writing dream.
It was a writing dream. I wrote from starting from nothing, no plot, no storyboard, no anything. I ended up with a quarter of that book written in 17 days.
Wow, that's pretty great. That's fantastic. And what kind of chocolate do you need to have?
Dark, preferably ginger, mint, or raspberry.
That also answers the question, what's your writing fuel of choice, actually, as well, unless there's anything else you need with the chocolate.
No. Definitely just the chocolate. Ginger is probably my favourite. So if anyone wants to send me a box of dark chocolate gingers, they will be great to see.
It'll help write your next book.
It will help me write my next book.
Fantastic. Okay, so we've got to know you a little bit better. let's start to get a little bit more in depth. So how do you describe your writing and what themes do you like to explore?
I think perhaps it was inevitable growing up in Ulster at the height of the Troubles that I'm interested in conflict in all different guises, and particularly the impact that has on families, on relationships, on personal integrity. So whatever I write is always in some sense or other an exploration of conflict. But I couldn't have written about the Troubles. That would, I think, have been too close. So 16th century Scotland's perfect because in many respects, the situation was very similar in terms of tribalism and people being not ever knowing when they went out every day if they were going to come home safe or not. I am particularly interested in the impact on your relationships and your family and how people cope with living within a conflict setting. If that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It must have been a very trying way to grow up, or place to grow up, time to grow up.
It was different, very different. Our normality was we went out and we did everything normally that other teenagers would do. But when you went shopping in Belfast or something, you expected to come home, but you always knew in the back of your mind that maybe today you wouldn't, which was a very sobering, in a way, thought to have in the back of your mind all the time. And I think it made life very precious.
Well, that's a very positive spin on it. So I like the big question I like to ask is what is the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
The art of self-editing, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Learning to be ruthless. And perhaps the big thing is realizing that whatever you've written is not cast in stone just because it's on a page or on a screen, that it can always be changed. It can always be cut out. And taking things out always helps, well, 99% of the time anyway. I like the editing process. I prefer the editing process to the writing process.
Yeah.
The writing process itself is quite tough, but when it gets to editing, it's a little bit like a puzzle. When things are flagged up as problems, when I flag them up myself as potential problems, then it's a puzzle to be solved, how I'm going to actually get over it. And I always feel that having edited something, it's a better book afterwards. So I don't mind losing thousands and thousands of words in the editing process. In fact, the more words I lose in the editing process, the more successful I think the editing is.
Hmm. So do you write long and you pare back? Is that how you generally write?
Yes. House Divided started off as about 132,000 words and was pared back to 118. The one I have just finished, which is due to be published, number three in that series, which is due to be published about the end of June, beginning of July, started off at about 145 and is now 132. So I do a significant cutting. And I love it.
But you do kind of save it, don't you, for like deleted scenes in case you need to bring it back. You don't just...
It's not generally deleted scenes. The last edit I did on House Divided, I cut out 5,000 words and none of them would have been in chunks bigger than a sentence.
Hmm.
And a lot of them would be just two words here and three words there.
Yeah.
And I lost 5,000 in that. So I very rarely delete a scene. Just tighten it up.
So have you worked with some good editors who've helped you along that journey, or do you think that's more just writing as you've written and got more experience that you've learned to love the editing process?
I've learned to love the editing process through writing, but I do have a good external editor. What he does for me is he challenges me. When the manuscript goes to him, he's very meticulous. He checks all the historical facts that I have in it. He checks all the locations. He checks all the characters. And he checks the timelines. And then he challenges me and comes back on things that he feels aren't perhaps as clear as he wants them to be, or... you know, how far a horse can ride over a certain type of terrain in a given time, and all these kind of little details he comes back and challenges me on. And then I have to justify my choices.
Because that's one of the things, like, I love historical fiction and I have just massive respect for writers like you who do so much research and stuff. It's because of all of that research and the fact that there are people out there who know, you know, who know this history better than I ever could, that kind of scares me off.
Scared of research?
Or
scared of getting something wrong.
Yeah, that's more it.
I think we'll always get something wrong. And I think you just have to do the best you can in terms of the research and knowing that at some stage or other you probably will get something wrong and just hoping and praying it's nothing major. It shouldn't be anything major if you've done your research, but people are always finding different things. So for example, I was reading something a couple of days ago where there was, it used to be that everyone thought that in medieval time women didn't wear underwear. And I've just read something in the last couple of days where they've now found evidence that they did. So, you know, there's going to be hundreds of people who have written stuff in books who will now realise that actually what they've written wasn't, strictly speaking, probably right. But that's it goes with the territory, really. But I just think you have to do the best you can. And sometimes if you're right and you know absolutely that you're right, you still have to not write the correct version because people's perception is so wrong that you risk losing readers.
Do you have an example of that?
I'll give you an example of that. Turn of the Tide opens, the very first page. Originally, in my first manuscript, I had rabbits on the first page. the very first feedback I got pre-publication was from somebody who said there were no rabbits in the wild in 1586 in lowland Scotland. That is something that I would dispute. And if anybody has ever had pet rabbits, they would know how difficult it is to contain them.
Oh, yeah. We know it in Australia.
However, it wasn't worth me fighting for that if it was going to put people off. So I changed it to partridges, which definitely were in the wild in Scotland in 1586. But I also took that little snippet and decided to use it as a plot point. So because clearly there are rabbits in the wild all over the place very shortly after that. And so I had one of my characters talking about releasing them into the wild, which meant it was a win-win situation for me. I could develop a character, I could give her a characteristic in a particular context that worked within the story, and I could satisfy all the people who thought they were not wild in the wild at that time.
So what drew you to the historical fiction genre?
I did research into the Ulster Scots vernacular at one point. And while I was doing that, I was researching several family histories. And when I came to write a novel, and I thought, what would I like to write about? Up popped a little footnote, just popped into my mind, a little footnote I remembered from these one of these family histories about a massacre in 1586. And I thought, yes, I'd like to write about that massacre and the fallout from it afterwards. All up to that point, I'd written short stories and they'd every single one been contemporary. But when I look back on it, most of my short stories were as far removed from me in location as in places like Afghanistan and Africa and so on, as historical novels are in time. And I came to the conclusion that I like to take myself and readers to a place neither I or they have ever been. That's a challenge.
Good. Are you trying anything new at the moment? So you said you just finished book three and you also have just done a different book out of your series, the Katarina Deliverance book. Have you been trying anything new?
Katarina Deliverance has been very new. Three ways in which it's been very new. I have never written, aside from a couple of short stories, I've never written in the first person. And Katarina is completely in the first person. It is also completely in the present tense, and I've never done that before at all. And it also has a dual time frame, which is, again, something completely different for me. I wasn't at all sure I could manage it. It was challenging, particularly challenging having the first person because you've got to focus very, very closely on your point of view. That was an edit all on its own, just checking that I didn't have any point of view slippage. Duo time frame was tricky, having the transitions between them. And present tense was interesting. Some people love it, some people hate it. I used to be in the camp of thinking I would never read a book written in the present tense, so to actually write one was odd in the extreme. But how it came about was that she's a very shadowy character. There isn't a lot of concrete evidence about how she thought. Well, there's no concrete evidence about how she thought, actually. We know some of the things she did, but not a lot about her character, except what other people said about her. And I wanted to find a voice. And so I started writing snippets in the first person in order to try and write myself into her voice. And I never actually intended any of them to be in the book. They were just random snippets. But I found once I started that I wanted to stay in that voice. And so I stuck with first person and present all the way through. And now I like it. But I now have book two to write. that's going to be the finish of that particular series. And I'm just a little bit worried that I might not be able to maintain that voice the whole way through, but hopefully I can.
You don't want to have written yourself into a corner.
I don't think so. It's just that I had to do the, I had to do the third Scottish book in between. So I'm now swapping back into Katerina mode. I think I shall have to reread the first book myself to get myself back into her voice. But I'm looking forward to it because there's a lot more of her story to be told.
Excellent.
I had something very exciting actually with Katerina this week, in that I got sent an article from a German newspaper. Someone had written an article about one of my, a little bit of my research trip in Germany.
Oh, fantastic.
Their visit to, my visit to their particular town.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, I can't read German. I can't speak German. So I had to rely on the Google Translate, which was probably a little bit ropey and certainly not idiomatic English, but I got the gist of it and it seemed very nice. And it was quite exciting to find that, A, that they'd written this article, and B, that two people had gone into their local bookshop in this tiny little town in Saxony and were able to order my paperback. I don't know how or from where, but they could.
Fantastic.
Which is rather nice.
Okay, so when you're not writing, I imagine that you like to read. So what writers inspire you?
Winston Graham, writer of the Paul Dark series. I absolutely love Winston Graham. And in fact, when I first started Turn of the Tide, before I started, I analysed the first Paul Dark book and sort of to see how he'd structured it and so on, and kind of kept that in mind when I was writing the first book. So I kind of feel that he's a mentor, even although he's no longer around. Daphne du Maurier, I absolutely love for her atmosphere and description. An author that people maybe have never heard of, but if they haven't, they should go and look her up, is an author called Rumer Godden, R-U-M-E-R-G-O-D-E-N. One book that I always recommend to people is called The Battle of the Villa Fiorita, which is written from the point of view of a child, and it's about the aftermath when these children, when their mother runs away with an Italian, and it's the children's reaction to that and what they do and how they try to get her back. And it's very moving, and I just think she's a fabulous writer.
I remember her kids' books from being really influential on me as a kid. I'm just trying to remember what they were called. The one there was, I think it had something to do with like Holly and Ivy. But yeah, I remember loving her books when I was a kid.
She's great for adults as well.
I'll have to look her, up her adult books as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I like atmosphere in a book. I like descriptive power, and I like writers that can be very succinct, but yet convey masses in one sentence. And I think all three of those writers do that.
Great. Okay, so you've told us a little bit about Katerina. So what actually inspired you to write that book?
I woke up to the 500th anniversary of the Reformation about 2 years before it happened, which wasn't really enough time, but nevertheless. And I started thinking about Martin Luther and thinking there'd be lots of coverage of him, lots of books about him. Probably not when I discovered he had a wife, which I'd never realised before. I thought probably not so much about Katerina. And maybe any coverage she would get would be romance heavy and history light. And I wanted to try, so I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to try and and write something which was a serious historical based on Caterina. And then I discovered that the reason why there wasn't much known about her generally was that there isn't actually much to be found, which was when I decided I needed to go to Saxony to sort of walk in her footsteps and try and get an idea of her location and her setting and her background and try and find her that way. But I really wanted to write a historical that wasn't romantic, because that's not the real story. So if anyone's looking for historical romance on Caterina, there are several other books in that vein, and they are not historically accurate. And don't look in them for history, but if it's romance you want, then realise you're getting the romance but not the true story.
So I think I'll start to wrap up, because I know you're a busy lady and you've got plenty of writing to get done. So you've just completed book three in the Turn of the Tide series, is that right?
Yes, and it will be called By Sword and Storm, I think. Yes, I'm pretty sure that's going to be the title. There's work being done at the moment on the cover and formatting and so on. It's been with the proofreader, and it's back to the publisher, and I haven't had the final manuscript back to check myself yet. They hope it will be out end of June, beginning of July in the ebook format. The print might be a little bit longer. That depends on printers' deadlines and so on. But I hope people will enjoy it as much as the first two. It is a follow-on from the first two, and it kind of has become more saga-ish, I suppose you could say, in that the first book very much focused on Munro himself, the second book very much focuses on his wife, and the third book has a wider focus on him, his wife, the Montgomerys, his children, what's happening to all of them in the aftermath of the second book.
And so have you started work on the second Caterina?
At the moment, I'm on my storyboard. I've got a significant storyboard already, but I'm looking for other bits and pieces. And I've just been in touch with someone in Torgau in Saxony looking for some more specific information on a side character for that, because I want to involve the wife of this side character was heavily involved in the first book, and I want to be able to continue to involve her, and I need to know exactly what her husband did and where and so on in order to do that. So I'm hoping that I will get that information back very shortly from Torgau. I do know my starting point now for that book, which is good, and I do know the end. I'm just not sure exactly what parts or events in her life that I'm going to cover.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I'll start to wrap up now. So if people are interested in your work, where can they find you online?
Well, they can find me on my website, which is www.margaretski.com. They can find me on Facebook. I've got both an author page and a personal page, but Sanderling Books is the author page. I think you find me under Margaret Ski Novels, author.novels, something like that. But if they Google me on Facebook, they'll find me. Ebooks, at the moment, the ebooks are wide, distribution. I'm thinking of putting Katarina into Select in order to do some promotions, so that might happen quite soon once I've worked out how to take it off wide. Not very technically savvy. And print, UK bookshops is fine. The best thing worldwide is probably the Book Depository, because they will do almost free delivery worldwide. I think at the moment they're charging like 92 pence or something to deliver it anywhere in the world.
Oh, have they changed? It's free to Australia last time I looked.
Oh, was it? Right.
Yeah.
Well, it may still be, but at one stage I looked, they were charging £10.92 instead of £9.99.
Oh, okay. And you mentioned also, just for anyone who's listening in Australia, that your books may be coming, whenever Amazon Prime comes to Australia, your books should be available.
Well, certainly Turn of the Tide, Amazon has asked if they can put Turn of the Tide in Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if I put it into Select, then that brings it into Kindle Unlimited. I don't know if that's available in Australia or not yet.
I don't know either.
But because that's slightly different from Prime.
Yeah.
But it certainly is. It is going to go into Prime once that comes online, for 3 months initial trial.
Excellent.
We'll see what happens with that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sparing the time to have a chat and learning all about your research. It's been really great. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you, Madeline. Lovely to be with you.
Thanks for listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?